Oh, I can relate to forgetting shit in other states. We played a show in Laramie, and luckily, I
Okay.
think we hadn't quite gotten to Fort Collins by the time we realized that we left all of our merch in Laramie. So
Oh
someone did was able to
no.
turn back and get it, but it was a close call.
The lost loot of fucking Maddie's changed.
Yep.
Yeah,
Oh yeah.
it's tricky, man.
Yeah.
When
Well,
he has to
yes.
come from California, it's like, don't forget the computer and the
Oh,
cords and the this and
every single
that.
time I forget something.
Right.
It's just like a matter of how important that thing is.
Yep. Yeah, it's just like you're going to the show and you're just like, okay, I've got this, I've got this, I got this, and then you show up and you're like, shit, we forgot the drums. I don't know how, but we did. It's something like huge and glaring.
Shit, we forgot
Right.
Michael.
We
Oh
forgot Michael.
well.
Welcome
The
to
dog.
Oh yeah.
Sorry.
Reagan
Welcome
just
to Feed
got
My Lord.
home.
This is a podcast. There definitely wasn't a corgi in the background that I got distracted by.
Wow.
Right.
So rude.
I'm sure he'll. Hopefully, he doesn't bark.
Ah, that's all good.
That'll
Just
be
background
cute.
noise.
He can do a
Yeah.
little feature.
Exactly. Yeah. But
Funny.
welcome to Fueled by Lore. Today we've got O Paris. We've got Michael and Mark with us together. Today I can't speak. But here we go. how long have you guys been a band? I'm actually kind of excited because I only like kind of know about you guys, and most of the musical guests, it's been like people I've been playing shows with for years. So like, what's the background story for O Paris?
Give us the lore, you guys.
The lore. All right. Do you want me to kick it off, Mark?
Yeah, go for it.
I met Mark in high school. And we went to college together, and I was not particularly a musician. I've, grown up kind of playing guitar on and off for a long time, and started with like a lot of late night dorm room things. And eventually he was like, hey, I made this in my free time, and I thought I could write words to it, and it turned out pretty cool. And that was, I want to say, our sophomore year. So I haven't graduated for like a year. So three and
Let's
a
do the
half years
math now.
now. Three and a
Oh,
half
there you go.
years.
3.5 years,
Final
yes.
answer.
Have you guys been putting out music the entire time, or is it just did it kind of start as just creative just for you guys and then
We always released.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
We released under a different name, a name that shall not be spoken, as people,
Ooh.
I was
as
gonna
I
say
do
that
not
too.
want people to find it, but
Yeah.
That's like the deep lore there.
Yeah.
Right.
I've also got those like ancient old projects. It's just like I won't tell you the name of that band.
Right. It's out there. If you know it, like, good
You
luck,
can
but.
find it. I just will not help you find it.
Yeah.
Secrets.
Yeah, it was cool. It worked out really well. I've been like a musician my whole life. I started playing piano when I was 7. So yeah, like Michael and I kind of hit it off in college, and it'd be super dope to have a band. So I made a
Nice.
couple of beats and sing on it, and the rest is history.
Cool. Is that kind of like your songwriting, kind of like how you guys go about songwriting, whereas like Mark, you'll kind of write like the music, and then Michael, you write like a vocal line over it, or just the lyrics, or is formula? Is that your guys's like songwriting formula, or does it kind of change up?
In the early days, definitely.
Yeah.
And still to this day, we do that a lot, but it has changed. Like in the early days, especially when I was really new to music, it was definitely Mark coming in, making the musical beat, and then even making the melodies, just like humming over it. And then once he kind of found a melody that we liked, I would go in and write over it. And then, I've been practicing for a while now. I'm getting a lot better at making melodies and stuff. So now, some of the songs all come up, with a very simple, progression or something like that. And then I'll write the whole song out, and then I'll kind of send, like the guitar stem and a vocal stem I have to Mark, and then he makes it incredibly shiny and sparkly. And he turns something incredibly rough and like half beat into, what you actually hear.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well because you know, I think our go-to things were very different. Like, I was always naturally good at, like, you know, playing piano by ear, for example, or doing, you know, like, I did sight reading, I did learning songs, all that kind of stuff. So that was very natural for me coming in. And for Michael, he was always like a lyrical genius, like the whole time to me. So like, I have a terrible time trying to write lyrics for songs and that kind of thing. And I still do. But the whole thing about the last 3.5 years is that, you know, you do kind of come into your own flow and you get better and better at things as time goes on. So, yeah, for the last couple of years now, we've been starting to get like all of the things for like each of us. So it's going pretty well.
Oh, awesome.
It's been sweet because we've kind of, we've taught each other a lot. You know, Mark has taught me, I mean, in his eyes, not a lot, but in my eyes, like a boatload about music theory and how music works and production and everything like that, to where, you know, I can do it all sort of at like an amateur level. I've gotten a lot better at guitar ever since I started taking it a lot more seriously, but and then he's gotten a lot better at writing, or like, you know, in the writing process, he's coming up with a lot more lines than the early days. And I think this is kind of being around people who are better at things that you're not, you know, you just kind of you start to pick up on it. And it's really cool that there's aspects to music that we are both good at, and it's really cool that there's aspects of music that we both suck at. Because like, if we were both really good at all of the things, like if we were both really cool at all the things, I think we'd have a lot more conflict in the music making process, which we don't.
Yeah. That's actually funny, because I think it's when I was in Maddie's Changed, when we were like the three piece, I was the only one in the band who wasn't primarily a drummer. So I think that from that, and also just that was pretty similar to my band in high school too, where most of the band was just people who were primarily drummers, and then we're just like, oh, we need someone to fill in on bass. And then it was just one of the two guys who played drums, and we're just like, okay, cool. And that definitely brought about like a serious appreciation for like drums and percussion for me. So I feel like when you get to see kind of, you know, how someone else approaches something like that, it's, you know, like you said, you learn a lot about these different aspects that you don't think about. Like, I'd never been like, I'd never thought about drumming like at all. I was just like, yeah, I'll just find someone to do that for me.
Right. And if everyone in your band is a drummer, I'm sure like coming to terms on what the final, you know, drum progression is must have been a nightmare.
Yeah.
Cause like they're all experienced in it. So they're all going to have their own experienced opinion on it, you know?
Yeah. I think it's also, it also makes some for some very entertaining, what's it called? Brainstorming, because then everyone's just like, but what if you do like ba-da-da-dum instead of ba-da-da-da? Right. And then we're just like, okay, what the fuck does that mean? Even
right,
the drum.
Definitely.
It was, yeah. So yeah. So with that, Michael, you and I were kind of talking earlier about having like a visual aspect to each song that you release. How long have you guys been doing that with all of your songs? As you kind of said, all of them have a visual aspect now.
Oh, yeah. Man. I mean, we try to do that for every song pretty much now, right? When did we start doing that? That's a good question.
I think Anywhere was our first music video.
I think that's a good place to start. That was our first like well-produced video that we had.
Right. Where, you know, we, through a friend of a friend, he was a videographer in college, and he's a genius. He shoots all of our official like music videos. And when we did that with this song, it turned out so cool, and like, it's still like one of like the proudest things that of the band is like that first video. And it skyrocketed the song. I still don't think we've beat that song in streams. Like, the video took off, and in that the song took off, and it just it all came as one. And then you're able to, you know, use bits for social medias and TikToks, and then the TikToks would take off, and the Instagram parts would take off, and it just like that song took the song from, you know, a smaller number to a much bigger number. I don't want to say numbers because I haven't looked at it in a while, but like it definitely bumped it up like 30,000-40,000 streams, which was super cool to see. And then after that, it's like, all right, well, if we think we have a song that is gonna be that has like that kind of hit factor, we have to try to do a video on it. And when you release singles, you kind of always are sort of looking for that hit factor kind of song. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so, like that's the hardest part though, is the video. Like the music gets planned around the video. It really does.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot goes into those videos there. Cause you know, we wanted to start off doing it like, not like, I mean, it's not a super insanely professional video. It's not like the best of the best, but we wanted to start out like doing our best job. So, mm-hmm. you know, we went to like, what, 3 or 4 different locations to film different things. And we had to lug gear up like into the mountains in Colorado, you know? But at the end of the day, like that whole process is kind of also why you do this, right? Because
yeah.
it's like a way to express yourself in like all kinds of different mediums. It's just an awesome opportunity to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah, we filmed a shot in the Eisenhower Tunnel. Definitely Ooh. Illegal, like yeah. super illegal, but it's still like one of the coolest oh shots we've ever done.
Yeah, we had like one take.
Yeah, one yeah. shot.
One option. I love that.
Two things. Well, I'm interested in like, because you're talking about chopping up your songs and your videos for like all this different social media stuff. And you know, we can yak about like social media stuff. How is it being that involved in something like that?
Like in the social media aspect?
Yeah, because that feels like, of course, you have to edit it for all these different platforms, you know?
Right. Or... Right. You know, part of why we work so well is I went to school for marketing. Like I said, oh. I don't have like the biggest musical
Yeah, that's a question for
planet.
Michael.
Right. I don't have the biggest musical background. Like I said, I've played guitar on and off my whole life, so I've always had that, but it was always just a hobby. But the marketing side, you know, I went to school for that, so I got pretty good at the understanding. I mean, I'm not gonna say pretty good, but like there's people who are masters at it. But I've gotten decent at understanding how the different social platforms work and the mm-hmm. analytics and when to post what where. And what kind of content does well, and you know what's eye catching and what's not. And my fiance Reagan is a way better marketer than me, and band manager, and she's a genius with that kind of stuff. You know, the running ads, marketing, all of that, understanding like the aesthetics and the visuals and stuff like that. She is always a great second pair of eyes for all of that. So she helps with that too. But I mean, that stuff's, it's time consuming, and it's yeah. a lot of data research and stuff like that. It's hard because you find like a lot of artists on all platforms, whether it's music mm-hmm. or painting or anything, really struggle with that, you know, because it's not at all an art form, marketing. Like it's not art, you know, it's
just hard work. Yeah.
It's just analytics and data and timing and understanding all of that. And you know, a lot of artists just like they want to make art, but then
yeah.
how do you get people to see it, you know? That's mm-hmm. that's the tough part.
Yeah, which is super cool that, you know, that's like as an artist, like just like my whole life I have the worst work ethic possible pretty much. Like that's what I've been fighting my whole life, and now I'm pretty good at it. But the whole thing about that is like you do have to be very like consistent with it. Like you want to be coming out with new shorts and, you know, get clips of your music videos and do all that stuff. And yeah, that's like a big thing that I think sets a lot of bands apart from one another is like, if you actually take the time and do all of that, then you will, you know, kind of start to grow. And yeah, it just takes one song to blow up at that point, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take too, because it's like, that's definitely the thing that I've always struggled with a lot. But then at the same time, I've seen a lot of bands kind of succeed with just like basically word of mouth, kind of like very like grassroots street team kind of thing. And given yeah. like that, when those bands got big, it was also, things are a lot different, literally just even like 10 years ago to now. Right. Like the power of social media has like exponentially grown. And so it's kind of interesting. And one thing that we've talked about a lot on the podcast is almost like a, you know, kind of like a distaste for social media, because there's like such a stark contrast. There's a lot of pros, but there's also like so many cons. So it's
definitely
very, you know, it can be kind of hard to straddle that line. Have you guys kind of felt that kind of pull between the pros and cons of social media?
Yeah. It, you know, it's hard to not get sucked into it and get validation from it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's tough. We've released one EP under this under our current name, and the reason we haven't done one again is because, you know, there's songs on that EP that didn't get a ton of love and kind of got swept mm-hmm. under the rug. And when you see that from like the social media aspect or from the numbers aspect, it's like super defeating, you know. A couple songs on there that like no one's heard, and it's like, wait, that's one of my favorite songs we've ever made. And EPs kind of they tend to, you know, have one or two songs that go under the rug, and like for us that was like a bit heartbreaking, you know. Well, some of the songs did do pretty well, like a couple of them just didn't, and it's hard to bounce back from that and like you know, keep releasing, even though there's like a bit of a fear that it doesn't like have good analytics and that people don't see it. But also understanding like why you're making it isn't necessarily for that, and understanding it's a form of self-expression and something that's, you know, supposed to be fun, not just like a fame chase, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that was well said. I have nothing to add to that.
Yeah, it's some tricky shit.
Yeah, I was actually gonna go for it, Beth.
Oh no, just relating to the whole like, yay, validation, like people like my stuff, this is worth pursuing. And is it worth pursuing still if people don't see it, witness it, experience it the way that I want them to? You know, art.
Right. I think there's a big difference between people who discovered fame when they initially used social media for fun, right? And then there's a big difference with people who are pursuing a career and use social media as a job. And in terms of the band page, right, it's like that it's harder to get sucked into that because it's like it's not something that the band page was ever used for fun, you know. It was used to, you know, keep people in the loop, where like these artists who were using social media for fun and initially before they were even known and then they blew up, now they're seeing a lot of difficulty, you know, like with self-validation and stuff like that. Just because like it's just so different, right? Social media is your living versus social media is your life kind of deal.
Yeah, I think it's almost better in a sense that like, well, if you look at people who blow up off of one song and then you see where they are like 5 years from then, you know, like how hard would that be, you know? Like I would way prefer to have something that's very gradual and then does very well at some point, you know, because you kind of learn how to, you know, figure out like not to take everything so seriously, right? Like I have my personal account, which I'll go on, and then the Au Pairs account I'll go on as well. But that kind of feedback is, well, for the most part, like totally positive. And there isn't that kind of like self-worth doubt, you know, that a lot of these people who just blew up over one song and now are, I mean, yeah, they got famous, but some of them just aren't having as good of a time as they used to be. So I think it's a blessing and a curse, you know?
Who gave you access to the Au Pairs account?
It was Walter. The corgi always does it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to kind of see that, and I like that approach. That reminds me of, I listened to, it was some podcast episode that Spotify just spat at me. Like, you listen to a lot of Bleachers and you listen to a lot of Mountain Goats, so here's a random interview that features both Jack Antonoff and the guy who's behind the Mountain Goats, and they just talked about it. But one thing they talked about, how the Mountain Goats, he kind of just did it for himself. Like, he was literally releasing albums that were recorded on like a, basically like a, one of those like radio speakers where you record directly onto the tapes. So there's one input and the mic is definitely shit, you can tell, but like gradually over time he kind of had like a cult following almost, and it just kind of, it was never meant to be big or anything. And then you kind of see people who, you know, go into like, you, we've watched so many like stars get famous and then like crash and burn at times. From being like child stars, like from Michael Jackson to like Britney Spears to Miley Cyrus and stuff. And it's, you know, I think that for me, I'd definitely prefer to have kind of like that gradual growth that you were kind of talking about. And also that we can kind of see in like how the Mountain Goats kind of talked about that.
Right. Yeah. That's a cool, everybody has to have like their own kind of niche or something that makes them unique. And I don't know, for us, like we've definitely taken as professional of an approach as possible, and that's almost sort of turned into our niche to try to find bands or artists that are a similar size as us who are making as professional output of product as we are, you know. Mm. Like whether it's the production, like finding bands with less than 4,000 monthly listeners who are making as well produced music as us, you know, is in my opinion, few. I'm incredibly proud of our production. Or finding bands, you know, as small as us who are making videos as professional as us, is few and far between. And I think that's kind of our niche, is just like putting every ounce kind of into it to make it as professional as possible, instead of where his was kind of the opposite, right? Like take an old tape recorder and have that sort of aesthetic to it. We've kind of taken it like, all right, well, I hear that Bleachers Jack Antonoff song and it sounds incredible. And it was produced by one of the greatest to do it in the industry. I want ours to sound production wise as good as that. And you know, that's what we go for. And I'm not saying we produce as well as Jack Antonoff, but I don't know.
One day
we try our best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, there's a bunch of steps to it. And I do kind of value that whole, like, cause a lot of artists right now, they'll say they want to get very big or like whatever, but they don't like necessarily put in the same product, like the workload that we do, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, and there are bands that do that as well. So we just want to do everything as well as we can right now and see where it leads.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any, like, what do you think, is there something that you wish you would have done differently when you guys first started out, or do you guys feel pretty comfortable with how you've gone about?
Definitely never get in a band with Michael, for sure.
There's a few songs where, you know, the crazy thing about when you first start a band and virtually the only people who listen to your music are people who know you directly, there's a very uncomfortable thing of you are saying something incredibly vulnerable and all of those people know exactly what it's about because they know you personally. And there was a song or two, you know, on especially on the old band where I certainly overshared or and it like that's tricky, you know, like going back to like why the band started, it kind of started after like a big breakup in my life and like a big heartbreak, right? And I was in like a lower space and Mark came and I was like, I want to write music to this. Like I can do this. And you know, sad breakup song after sad breakup song. And like some of them with vast amounts of oversharing, vast amounts of personal life oversharing. And you know, I look back and I'm like, maybe I could have written that song a bit more vaguely or like less to the point, you know? Yeah.
But that's cool how that's kind of what started, like, you know, you having that artistic outlook on just like a lot of things in life, right? Because it always has to start somewhere, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's like a growth process to it. But like, if you hadn't overshared as much, like, would you necessarily like be as good of a lyricist as you are now? Like, there's all these kind of steps that I think are kind of leading to a good place. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we have any major regrets. No. Mm-hmm. I like how we did it. And it all worked out. Like it doesn't matter now. Looking back at it, like absolutely none of that matters to this day. But in the moment it was like we'd release a song and I'd get a text or two from people being like, yo, man, you said that. And I was like, I forget, like the people who are currently listening to my music, like know me and the circumstances and the context and everything. So,
yeah, well, I guess we cracked the mystery. The misery came first before the music.
Certainly.
At least in this case. But
for me, at least, for Mark, it was like, yo, I made an EDM beat and it's sick. And I was like, that's tight. Let me write some really sad lyrics over it. And that's literally, that was our first song. Yeah. And he was like, I don't know if that's the fit. And I'm like, no.
You're like, no, let me be
sad. We're releasing it next week.
No, let that. Me be sad. That's funny.
Yeah, that's exactly how it worked. I think looking like in terms of just like growth, we would have grown quicker if we had chosen a genre, I suppose, earlier. You know, on that older band, we released an album and we made it in 3 months. It's crazy. It's like
holy cow.
It was like the most hectic. Writing to recording to producing to releasing. And I'm not saying it was a good album, but it was. I'm not saying it was a bad album. There was a couple good songs, but like 3 months. We did that entire thing in 3 months and released it. And every song was a different genre, like by far. There was EDM music. There was classic pop music. There was jazz on there.
I think
I wrote a pop punk song at one point. There was like sad piano ballads. It was a mess, right? Like no person on the planet would listen to this album front to back because no person on the planet likes that many genres of music.
Yeah. The idea of like genre is like super interesting to me because I feel like in high school, whenever I started a project, it was always like, oh, I want to be just like this band. And then now growing up, I'm just kind of like, you know, like I'm not doing like a solo singer songwritery kind of thing, but now I'm just like, I want to be in a band and it would be cool to do. Like, honestly, I have this interesting itch where I'm like, I want to start a hardcore band, but not sing and just play guitars. Like, what if I just release it as Morning Hunting, confuse the fuck out of everybody?
Right.
But I think it would be funny, but like, but it would just like, you know, I don't know. For me, genre has been something that I've like kind of struggled with. So did you guys like consciously choose a genre and then say like, oh, we're just gonna work on like this kind of music, or do you think that you will evolve like into a different genre but it'll be kind of more gradual as opposed to having jazz, pop punk, and piano ballads all in one release?
That'll never happen again.
Yeah, no.
I kind of want to hear that because I think that I think I would love that.
We'll make you an album.
I'll send you the album after the podcast if you really want to hear it.
Oh, I definitely want to hear it.
Yeah. When we started O Paris, we did make a conscious effort to like make sure everything's in the general genre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like no more of the jazz and pop punk kind of thing. It's definitely, but that being said, within this style, there are other like subgenres that we delve into as well, like more chill or more upbeat kind of thing, which is still like a fun thing to explore. But yeah, I think like just a general indie pop. Is that what we are? I don't even know.
Yeah, I would call it like an indie alternative pop rock even.
Yeah.
And aspects.
Just throw more words in there. See.
Yeah.
Right. But like, I think a lot of people fall into that kind of area. It's genres are so much more gray now, you know? Right. Like, I don't know, like there's so many artists you can bring up, but like you can name two artists and they're both considered pop, but they're both vastly different, you know?
Yeah.
And while all of our songs, I guess, fall into the same genre, you can still like pull. And the cool thing about contemporary music is its history has been pulling from other genres, you know? And you can still pull a little bit from jazz, you know, in a chord progression or something, and then still make it like an indie pop contemporary song, and like no one's gonna be like, whoa, that's super like outside their genre, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's how we ended up with so many genres in the first place.
Right, exactly. It just it kind of blends, you know? Like if we released an electronic song tomorrow, like I don't think it would be taken too poorly, you know? I don't think people would like it. Like I think we could make that to where it kind of fits, you know? And I don't see us not doing that in the future. Pop punk though, we're not gonna do. that was a one and done. I was like,
got a huge aversion to that. I appreciate that that's where it came from, but like, I don't know, it's interesting.
Right.
So have you guys kind of been in the music scene in Denver and in California, or has it kind of just been like Denver area?
I would say Denver, right?
Okay.
I think it could
be both.
I think it started primarily in Los Angeles, as that's where we started, you know?
Mm-hmm.
First big show was in LA, you know?
Yeah.
stuff like that. But I think it, yeah, it's, I think the Denver area has taken to us better as the LA market is just so flooded, you know?
Yeah. That's what I kind of heard a lot about LA.
Yeah. It's a little easier to stick out here.
Yeah. Cause I mean, LA kind of used to be the, and it still is the happening place, but it is much less so than it used to be. Mm. Like, I'm in school for composition right now. And my whole thing about going to LA was you hear these stories about going to like just like a party randomly and then meeting like someone like Hans Zimmer. And you're like, oh, or, you know, to a lower level. But it's really not as much like that anymore, you know? Mm. So I do agree. And that being said, like, I feel like we don't necessarily need to be tied down to any certain state, you know, like we're kind of just over the globe, and it makes everything easier because nowadays, you know, even in composition, people will like send stems over like across the country. I mean, one of the guys I was working with, he had this incredible violinist in London, and she would do these like insane like tracks just stemmed out, recorded literally 30 minutes, send it over, and you can already mix it, you know? So yeah, the whole thing is changing a lot. It's interesting to see where it'll go.
I like that. I've never really sat down and collaborated with someone like that, and that's something that I've always been kind of interested in. But I also think that, so would you guys say that your strength would definitely be on like, and focus would be on like the production, writing and distribution of music, as opposed to maybe like focusing on like the live aspect? Or do you kind of feel like you have a pretty even balance between the two?
Oh, I would say, yeah. You know, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it, you know, our first live show was like the most horrifying thing on the planet for me, as I had never performed music live in my entire life. And like, we played a very famous venue in Los Angeles, and I was, you know, losing it
for our first show. Yeah.
Right. For our first show. So like, I think my aspect with live music and how much effort it takes is it's not super worth it if there's not, a way to get your voice heard by new people. You know, I love singing to our fans and our current supporters, but if you headline a show and then all the people who show up are your fans, and then you want to play again a month later, well, all the same people are going to show up minus 10, because those 10 were like, well, I saw them a month ago. I don't, you know? Right? So that's like the harder part is booking shows, you know, opening for people, kind of getting heard more that way, because like the live show takes so much effort for 30 minutes, you know, like in the end of it. So I think our strength is definitely the releasing, the writing, the production, the visuals, which are all our videographer Dylan, and everything like that. But that being said, I've loved performing live, and I think we've gotten so much better at it. And now that we've brought on Spencer, our drummer, it's been, you know, he's changed the whole game, you know? And the live show is so much more possible now than it like used to be. So it's just kind of like, we reach out, you know, we're hoping to play a bunch of shows this summer. Got a couple things lined up that I will probably talk about later. and I'm stoked. Yeah, it's been real cool.
Nice. Yeah, I think it's always interesting to, you know, meet people who kind of feel like they have strengths in different areas, where I feel like my strength has always been in the live side of things. I don't know. It's always interesting because, you know, the industry is always constantly changing and everything. And so it's really interesting to like hear you, Mark, hear you talk about just kind of basically like international composition essentially, and then recording that way, because it's just like a side of the, you know, this world that I have just never really gotten to see, because essentially like I've been, my whole music industry experience is playing in someone's basement or like down at like DIY venues wherever we could, whoever would let us play, and then kind of thing. So it's interesting to kind of see that.
Yeah.
And then it's also to hear different philosophies, because I've heard some people go about like, oh yeah, We just played as many shows as possible for like 2 months and then didn't do anything and then released a bunch of music. So it's, you know, there's so many different like recipes and concoctions to try and take a stab at making this whole music thing work out. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it all goes together. And, you know, doing shows, I think, like, in my eyes, it's the best of both worlds. Like, it's like you do as many shows as you can comfortably, obviously. And that way you can be prepared for, let's say something does blow up and become like Taylor Swift or something, you know? Like, we'll be able to tour. You're going to say Taylor Swift?
No, not Taylor Swift. This point, you continue.
Okay. It's like, wow, that's pretty specific.
I have this like recurring nightmare, right? And it especially happened.
Mess up a show.
Well, no, it especially happened like in the earlier days of releasing music, right? And it was like, we drop a song. Early me, who had never performed music live like once in his life, we release a song, it explodes, right? And then like the whole dream happens, right? You got like record deal, everything, and then boom, world tour is announced and you have sold out shows across the country and your first show is for a massive crowd and I've never ever played music live before. And like that was my recurring nightmare, is like, what if something blows up but I have no live music experience at all ever? And so that was when I was like, yeah, we need to play shows. Like, I need to bomb. I need to bomb in front of people at smaller venues just in case this, like, works out really well. And
if it works out really well,
I have to do it in front of a bunch of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll need, like, American Idol level of auto-tune on the stage, you know?
Oh, yeah. Got to have all the experience to play for just your mom and dad bought tickets. Go.
Right.
What do you think has been like the most uncomfortable or like, you know, toughest live music situation you guys have faced?
Oh, that's easy.
Oh.
What are you going to say? Well,
I was going to say the show in Colorado that I flew out for.
Oh, no, like, I toughest. Was going to say. Oh, that one just had a bunch of sound problems, but like.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go.
That one was just annoying. Because
context. Well,
We were playing with another band that was like, they were less experienced than we were, which was not a good sign. which, you know, they were all great people. And we had a good time with them. But, you know, they did the whole soundtrack where you get all the levels right and everything's going smoothly. And we're like, okay, cool. We're about to go up on stage. Do our thing. We get there and everything's turned down to zero. So we're like, okay, did anyone like, you know, take a picture or something? Like, obviously you wouldn't just like, who's the sound guy running this? We talked to everyone there, like, I don't know who did it. They're like, they're like, we're performing right now. We don't. So we had another guy come down and he was super nice. He just tried to like live figure out the sound, you know.
He was sound checking us while we were performing to the crowd.
While we were performing, so, you know, you're hearing, like, crackling in the speakers and that whole, like, first song or two. We were just like,
feedback. Come on, man. Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah.
They rented out an amphitheater somewhere in, like, Highlands Ranch or something. And they were like, yeah, man, like, we got a guy who's been doing production for years. He's going to throw all the sound together. Like, it'll be great.
Right.
Bunch of tickets sold, yada, yada, yada. We're like, sweet. And yeah, we get there early. We are doing like all of the sound and Mark and I are not sound techs like in the slightest, you know, and we are trying to figure that out and spend hours and hours doing it. And then, yeah, we get up on stage and nothing, like they turned everything down to zero, like all the levels that we did.
Wow.
And that was brutal. But like we performed, our timing was good. We hit our pitches.
Right. Yeah.
There were no major mistakes.
As far as the whole performance went, it was, you know, it was smooth. So.
Right. You know, my answer would have been our first show.
Oh, yeah.
We played at the like legendary Whiskey A Go-Go off of Sunset Boulevard. You know, it's crazy to like stand on the same stage as Hendrix and Beatles and everybody played there at some point. And, we were the first opening band on a ticket for probably 8 bands, I'd say.
Oh.
Yeah. And
7 or 8. Yeah.
Their theory, the headlining band was called 96 Bitter Beings, and they were metal, like it was metal music.
Okay.
And so the promoter's thought process was, we'll start soft and get progressively like harder, you know?
Okay.
And so again, this is my first live show. I played a ukulele for some of the songs, like
leading up to a heavy metal headliner.
Dude, the crowd that walks in is like leather jackets, face tattoos, like piercings everywhere, like just like hard rock people, you know? And we go up and play indie pop, soft pop music for like 35 minutes. And everyone is kind of looking up like, who the hell are these guys? And the bet, like, but like the thing that made up for it is there were like two or three in the crowd, like leather jacket, motorcycle, face tattoo, like heavy metal people, who were kind of like bobbing their head a bit.
I love that.
And that was the best part. But the sound, like, it was our first show ever, so we weren't really sure like how certain sound checks worked like that. And the sound guy was, you know,
the sound that was what I was
super
say.
Hard on us. And
yeah,
it was very humbling, to say the least.
Well, our thing was like, we wanted to be as close to like the music that we made as possible. So we brought like what, a piano, two guitars, a uke, and then like a bass.
Yeah, I brought a bass.
And so the sound guy just goes like, are you kidding me? I have to sound check.
We're
all
a two man band and we show up with like enough instruments for like an 8-piece band.
He was just was just pissed the whole time.
Oh.
He's like, you don't even have drums.
Yeah.
So we gave him reason to be upset and mad, but I don't know. That was like probably the most difficult show for me.
We've,
like that
we've
was
grown
just,
a lot since then, I think.
Right. The live shows have you know, you simplify them and it's like, all right, I'm picking a guitar and it's the only guitar I'm playing the whole show. And I'm not playing bass. I'll never play a ukulele on stage again. You know, like,
until we're really famous.
Yeah, I think the most complicated I'll go is I will always bring two guitars just because there was one show where we were playing and then my A string just snapped mid-song and I was like, cool, this is great. And that's the story of why I bought a second guitar just in case.
So you have a backup.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Honestly, yeah, I should probably bring multiple guitars to shows just at least to have one chilling.
Yeah.
That happens more often than you'd expect, though. Like, I guess less for us because we're less like rock, you know? But yeah, I had a guy that happened to me in one of my classes like 7 times. And one of them was the performance. So he's like, well.
Right. So. Yeah. The guitars are used pretty gently in our stuff.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, Beth, you got any other burning questions on your mind? We kind of approach time here.
Well, I keep thinking about, this is going like way back when, for like the visual aspects of your guys' songs. Cause that's new to me with your music. Cause to be honest, like I first, met you guys, we'll say, at a live show in Denver, which was great. So yeah, you guys' live performances are fab. But so like, what makes the visual aspect of like making music so interesting to you? Because I'm like, because at that point it's not just like a song and it's not just a music video, it's like something like in between, which is really interesting to me because it's like sort of a new like,
it's an experience.
Yeah, like an experience, like a little movie, a little something.
It tells a story, even if it's not like a narratively driven music video. It adds an emotion to a song that isn't so black and white, right? Like, obviously, if you record like a sad breakup song, the emotion is sad breakup song. But you can record a music video that is about falling in love and then putting that to a sad breakup song, and it adds a completely different emotion to it, but it still fits, you know, it completely fits, you know? And that's the coolest part is just thinking of creative ways to make something stick in the listener's mind, right? Mm. People are typically more visual learners than audio. is what I would say. So to make someone remember you, if you can give them something to watch and consume that will stay in their mind for longer periods of time, whether it's just a unique shot or a crazy color palette or a way to cut something specifically or transition. And again, like, I have to give a massive shout out to our videographer. His name's Dylan, Lost Media Productions. He is a genius, and he's done it all for us, and he's going to shoot the next one and the next one and the next one, and I will never go to anyone else for a music video. But it adds a whole other aspect. And, you know, I think there's, like, you ever hear a song sung by someone and then you see what they look like and you're like, that is not at all what I thought they would look like. You know, I had no idea they'd look like that. And I think it gives someone, like, they hear Oh Paris and they think of, like, all of these visuals we've put out and be like, I know exactly what they look like. I know exactly what their style is. I know exactly how they compose themselves, how they move, how tall they are, like, what they look like, what their feel is, and the emotions that they convey in the song. I think it's just the hammer on the nail, you know? You have the emotion behind the music, and then you can completely switch that up in the video and make it completely fit artistically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like a second outlet of, you know, getting your ideas out, right? Like, for me, it started out as music. I would, like, sit down at the piano and, you know, improv something or just do something that I felt like would kind of express myself. And for Michael, I think for a long time that was, like, lyrics, right? And we've gotten better at that, but it was cool to start doing these music videos and visualize stuff, because that's, like, a whole other way to express ourselves that we didn't delve into as much. So it's cool to keep doing that, and it's really cool to keep growing in that aspect as well. So
I like that. That's something, like, I shot the most professional music video I've ever done this past year for my last EP, and, like, I had, like, you know, exactly as you guys said, it's kind of just a different way to tell the story of the song, which, and you can just, you know, add a whole other layer to it. So basically, like, the song I did, it kind of the music video kind of had, like, a breakup-ish feel to it, which it wasn't really about a breakup. So it's, I don't know, it's just kind of, you know, exciting to find new ways to express yourself and expand.
Right. And finding ways to make something look really, really good with little, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. One of my favorite videos of ours for a song called Change, and we filmed the entire thing in a tiny one-car garage at my old apartment. Whole thing. And the whole premise and narrative of the song was, it started out in basically an empty garage, and then as the song progressed, the set constantly changed to reflect different moments in our lives with different objects and materials that were sentimental to us in some way. So started out with, like, a white backdrop in a garage, and then the next scene would have baby pictures on the wall, and then the next scene would have a guitar in the background because that's what's really important to me, and then it would have family pictures of Mark and his family, you know, or then a suitcase pops up, you know, for a love of travel and exploring, and just a constant change. And it adds kind of, like, an emotion, even though that entire song is about, like, a toxic relationship that has changed from, like, its I guess, like, conception, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was about, like, hey, this relationship was good at the beginning, and now it's changed and it's terrible, but we took the video and, you know, made a way to, like, add a different, completely different narrative to it, but it still kind of fit when you hear it.
The layers.
Right. Right.
But really? No kidding. I love that.
Thank you.
Art.
It's a good time. Yeah.
With that, I've, got to find my way to Boulder here soon, but we have a ceremonial last question for you guys before we skedaddle. Beth, do you want to do the honors?
Sure, pat him out. Hey, guys. What feels like home to you?
Mark?
That's a good question.
Mark feels like home to you? That's really cute.
Mark feels
like home. Just me? Yeah.
I've been away from home for a month.
I know.
Feels like home to you, Mark.
What feels like home to me? Well, it's interesting coming from me, right? Because I'm still a college student, so home is wherever they put me for the semester or the year, you know? But that's where I think that, like, home goes kind of deeper. I think it's just, like, the people you're with, like, whether it's family. For me, it's been, like, family and, like, friends, like, a major part, right? Because the dynamic of the energy and, you know, even just like the jokes you make, the experiences you share together, I think it all will change, like, depending on who you're with. So I like to think of it as, like, you have a bunch of different homes, right? Mm-hmm. And you can, like, go back to something that you know is safe, right? And you can go back to another, like, maybe your friends or your family, you know? I think that's kind of the way that a lot of people live their lives, and that's how I will continue to do it. So I think that's my answer. Made me think for that one.
I'd say home is where you feel comfortable and where you feel loved. I think we live in a world and a culture where you are pushed to constantly get out of your comfort zone and excel and meet people and grow your portfolio. So home is where you get to go home and do none of that. You know, it's where you get to go home and be comfortable in your comfort zone and feel loved by whoever is loving you at the time. And like, truly be yourself, because we live in a world where, you know, sometimes a lot of people have to put on a facade to excel. So home is where you feel comfortable and loved. Now, has any guests ever asked you guys that question? Has that been flipped on you?
Yeah, yeah, we actually got that last week.
It does change all the time, I feel like, though.
Yeah, yeah, it's our answers have been, like, changing, so. Which actually literally, like,
new.
Yeah, well, actually, literally, like, last week, that was funny that, Michael, you mentioned the comfort thing, because I think my answer, I think last time, when we kind of, like, restarted after a long break from the podcast, and Beth asked me, and I said the mountains, just because I can kind of, you know, get away, and kind of that's where every single time I get to go be a little dirt bag and live out of my car in the mountains for like a week and just climb a couple and whatnot, and then I come back and I just feel more myself, kind of thing. It's almost just like meditative. And then I mentioned that, you know, maybe I initially had started saying, like, oh, it's where you feel comfortable, but it's like, there's, in doing that, it definitely gets me to a point where I do not put myself in comfortable situations all the time. So I felt that for me, it was kind of the opposite, where sometimes, you know, wherever I'm living or, you know, whatever job I'm in can just kind of be complacent and comfortable. And what I need at the time is, you know, being pushed out of that. So for me, I guess home right now is not being comfortable, kind of thing, is what I'm looking for, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that answer could easily be flipped and be like, home is where you have to push yourself, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like, yeah, almost like whatever gives you more energy, you know? Mm-hmm. Somewhere you can just, it's like your comfort zone kind of thing, right? Like that, yep. And then the flip side as well. That's really interesting. That's cool. The last tear trying to mend the way you left me lying wide-eyed in my bed. And you came back again, or maybe it's just in my head. All these things are left unsaid, all these words are in my head. Well, I just want it to end. Yeah, what are we doing soon? What are we coming out with?
You asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we're plugging ourselves. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah, oh
yes. That's right. Yeah. Where can we find you? We totally forgot about that.
No, you're all good.
Honey is streaming everywhere. You can find everything at oparismusic.com. We'll be releasing a new song in video soon. That's going to have a very charitable cause behind it. And I'm really excited to step into that aspect and see if I can actually make what I make impact others. So next song is going to have a very charitable aspect. Every dime that song makes will go to a charity, whether it's through merch, streams, views, everything will go to a charity for helping people with addiction. And so we hope people listen to that when it comes out. You can expect that in late March, I'll say.
Awesome.
That's why I asked you. You do a good job of that.
Thank you guys for being on the podcast with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us. It's fun.
Another outlet for me to be an attention whore, pretty much.
We're artists,
exactly,
baby.
That's how I feel.
We're artists, so.
Man, art is dead. We're just a bunch of attention seekers.
Right. Short answer as to why we do anything.
We're just attention addicts.
I want money.